The Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefery.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefery's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefery.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 64. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring you experts in the field to talk shop. If you have not already done so, please subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube, or join us on our mailing list at ronmckeefery.com so that you can stay up to date with all the latest episodes as well as anything else that we have going on. This week, very, very excited to have David Joyce, the head strength coach for Western Force Super Rugby, with us. He's also the author of High Performance Training for Sports. And if you have not gotten this book, this is a game changer. This is a very great book I'm going through, and I'm about halfway through it. It's just a fantastic resource where he's collaborated with some of the best strength coaches in the world and wrote a text and it's really done very, very well. So make sure you check that out. We talk about his journey into strength and conditioning. We met back at the UKSCA conference when I spoke there. That's a fantastic event, and obviously we've been able to develop a friendship from that, and just a fantastic strength coach. But, you know, we talk about his journey. We talk about programming for rugby. We talk about the book. And just a great conversation that could have gone on for hours and hours and hours. And so I know you're really going to enjoy this episode. Before we do, we want to make sure we recognize our sponsors, IgnitionAPG.com and EliteForm.com. If you've not done so, make sure you go and you like their Facebook page and so you can stay up to date with the latest things they got going on. I mean, they're in some of the top programs in the country and just have fantastic products. From their strength planner to their power tracker and the whole deal. And so you get a free trial for the paperless system and the strength planner by going to igct@eliteform.com. Just send them an email. Tell them how much you appreciate them being a part of the show and get that free trial. And it's, like I said, it makes things, I mean, it's, you know, it's, you know, spending hours and hours on an Excel spreadsheet, it makes it very easy to be able to push workouts to your athletes. Lastly, if you have not gone to strength-ondemand.com, strength-ondemand is a online archive of strength and conditioning clinic presentations that myself and Rob Taylor put together. It's 50-plus strength and conditioning presentations. So basically a clinic in your pocket that you can watch anytime and on your time. And we're actually going through a redesign of this program. We're going to be adding lots of content here pretty soon. And so I'd encourage you to go and join while it's still only, I think it's $97 right now. But $97, the cost of one clinic for 50-plus presentations, is well worth it. And I've gotten nothing but positive feedback about it. So check that out, strength-ondemand.com. And I know you'll enjoy that. So sit back, enjoy this episode, go out, get this book, High Performance Training for Sports, and take lots of notes. We'll see you on the other side. Take care. All right, guys, very, very excited to have David Joyce with us. David, I met, golly, it's probably, 5 years ago at this about this time, over at the UKSCA, and it's just a fantastic example of how, you get the opportunity to meet people from all over the world and interact, and you never know where those relationships are going to take. And, you know, David and I reconnected, and he's got a fantastic book out that we'll talk about, but man, I'm excited you're on, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Ron. Listen, I'm absolutely thrilled to be on here today. It's been such a huge journey since I first met you way back when in, in England, and really pumped to be joining you today.
Well, you know, and you're up early, bright and early. It's what, 7 a.m. over there right now?
Yeah, it's an early start. It's an early start.
But I appreciate you getting up, man. I'm excited to jump into this with you. But, you know, for everybody that, you know, that hasn't got an opportunity to read your book yet and get to know you a little bit better, go into your journey. You know, where did you start? What was your motivation into getting into strength and conditioning? And then, obviously, how you've gotten to where you're currently at?
Okay, so my background is both as a strength coach and a sports physiotherapist. So my first degree was as a physio, but all the way along I knew that my interest, rather than in manual therapy, my interest and skills lay in exercise therapy. So I've always been in strength coaching and athletics coaching, and my background was in Australian rules football as well. So I did all my qualifications in physiotherapy and sports physiotherapy masters, and then did a master's in strength and conditioning as well. And, you know, picking up all my badges all the way along. So I've been, you know, as with all of us, you know, the qualifications are fine, but it's the people that you meet and spend time with and the athletes that you get to work with that groom who you are as a coach, as a person. And so I'd say that my journey really has been shaped by going to conferences and meeting people like yourself and Dan Baker and all the greats of our industry and taking little bits from each of them rather than any particular one person. You're a product of all the people that you meet and all your experiences. And I've been lucky enough to have worked in the English Premier League with the British Olympic team in the Beijing Olympics, with the Chinese Olympic team at the London Olympics, with a football club in Istanbul called Galatasaray, which is a huge football club there, madness, but great. And then finally, I was really fortunate to be offered the role as head of athletic performance at Western Force, which is one of the clubs in the Super Rugby competition. It's based in Perth in Western Australia, and we are the most travelled team in world sport. Our closest away match is 4.5-hour flight. Away, which obviously means it's a 4.5-hour flight back. So we've got significant hurdles that we need to be able to jump to be able to compete with the big boys in that competition. And so that's kind of my role at the moment. And I lecture on the Masters of Strength and Conditioning course at Edith Cowan University. And just a lifelong learner like yourself.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? And that's you know, we talk about being a technician, a great technician, being a great manager, learning how to manage people, resources, and time, and all those things. But it's also being entrepreneurial and constantly challenge yourself to strive to continually learn. And I know we both share that, so that's awesome. Talk a little bit about you know, the fact that you're both a physio and a strength and conditioning coach, and how that's kind of shaped you know, both your career and kind of your programming.
I think a lot of physios or athletic trainers tend to have the reputation as being handbrakes. They're always thinking about what you can't do. So if someone's injured, oh, they can't do this or they can't do that. Whereas I think what I've got and my background and those that share my background do have is an ability to think, okay, well, what is it that the athlete can do?
Right.
Certainly as physios, you're not taught about strength. The physios are commonly caught giving three sets of eight bodyweight squats and going, oh, well, these are going to strengthen up your quads. And I think what having my background as a strength coach gives me is an ability to really program from a performance perspective rather than a medical perspective. I find sometimes the medical perspective is too safe, it's probably just too safe. It's rather than trying to push for performance. And ironically, sometimes when you try and be too safe and not put the athlete at and really extend the athlete, all you're doing is a disservice, and you're not exposing them to the sorts of forces that they would get in their sport.
Sure.
And in actual fact, therefore, you're being unsafe. And I think what having that knowledge of pathology gives me is a really good understanding of where we need to go with that particular injury. But being a strength coach gives me a really good indication of where we need to be from a performance perspective. And I think they're pretty natural bedfellows, really. And I wouldn't say that I'm the world's best strength coach. I certainly wouldn't say I'm the world's best physio, but what I think I do have is an ability to understand both sides of things and have good conversations with people that are the best, you know, and pick little bits from each person. So I think that's it's a great background for me, I believe.
No, I agree 100%. And so many times that role or that relationship, especially, you know, here in the United States, could be an adversarial type of relationship. And
Yeah. The
reality is that you can't have, it's like your right hand without your left hand. You gotta have both so that you can do the best service for your athletes. That's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right. And there's a lot of thoughts in Australia and the UK and the States, obviously, as well, that, oh, well, the strength coaches break them and then the physios fix them. And that's a really flawed approach. It's a terrible approach. And a lot of teams have it. And you see they're the teams that have high injury rates or, you know, not successful seasons because it's effectively a dysfunctional team. Mm. Whereas certainly at the Force, we don't have a medical team. We don't have a strength and conditioning team. We have a performance team. And the sports meds, the physios and the doctors look at the athlete from their background and their perspective, and they're involved with the training athlete as much as the S&C coaches are involved from day zero of the injured athlete.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, that high performance model, you know, performance team model is such something that we should all strive for, because that's, you know, to have the input with the coaching staff to use science and technology to really drive your programming and come from that approach, I think is critical, you know, to having ultimate success.
Yeah, and that places the athlete in the middle and then he's got his support team around him rather than having, you know, whispers in dark corners from the S&C team saying, oh, the physios are not allowing you to do this, and
right.
All that creates is disharmony and the athlete doesn't know where it is, rather than just having a unified team opinion because you've got people that understand each other.
Well, you know, that's one difference that I've seen from, you know, with strength and conditioning around the world. What are some other differences that you've seen, you know, because, you're well-traveled, English Premier League and Australia and England and the whole deal. What are some of the biggest differences you see from country to country?
I think I've probably picked up more differences maybe a decade ago than what you do now. And I think because of the internet, because of podcasts like this, because of cheaper travel, people are actually getting out more and spending more time in other facilities. So we have Brits come and spend time with us. We have Americans come spend time with us. I go across to the States. I go across to England. And so there's a real melding of ideas now and philosophies. So I don't think it's as stark a contrast as what it was maybe 10 years ago. What I would say in the States overall, and this is going to not win me too many friends elsewhere, but overall I think there is a greater emphasis on coaching skill in America. So I think some of the world's best athletic coaches are unbelievable coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I think what the Brits and the Aussies are particularly good at is the sports science side of things.
Sure.
And then you get the people that are the world's best, you know, yourself, Dan Baker. These are the people that understand the science but also understand the individual, and it's the key to understanding the individual that is that makes the world's great coaches. But in essence, there's world's great coaches from the US, from Australia, from New Zealand, from South Africa, from France, from Norway, from all over the show. But I think overall, I would say there seems to be a greater emphasis on coaching skill in America, and there seems to be a greater emphasis on scientific rigor in the UK and Australia. But that's being unfair on those individuals that are unbelievably good.
There's definitely examples of a lack of either in either country, and obviously examples of excellence in multiple countries. And I think what you said early on was right on point with, you know, the borders are shrinking, aren't they? I mean, the world is getting so small, and it's so neat to be able to sit on a podcast and talk to a guy halfway around the world and get better. And I know that we both share that passion for you know, having a global approach to strength and conditioning and really learning and getting an opportunity to interact with various strength coaches.
And certainly, you know, with this book that we've published, there are American coaches, there are Australian coaches, New Zealand coaches, British coaches, French coaches in there. So there's people around the world, because what you do is you try and handpick the people that you believe are unbelievably good, irrespective of what their passport tells you.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned Edith Cohen, you know, early on, and I think that's such a unique and great program. And you know, talk a little bit about that program that you're a part of, and you know, where maybe you see, you know, some of the best research and ideas coming from right now.
Edith Cowan University is based here in Perth, and it's a terrific university. It's one that is particularly strong in strength and conditioning. So the actual Masters of Strength and Conditioning course is run by Dr. Greg Huff, who last week was voted as president of the NSCA. So that's a huge thing for our university. And we've got some terrific people. Dan Baker is there. Sophia Nymphius is there. Jeremy Shepherd is there. So some real big guns all contribute to the course. I think the strength of the course is the fact that it is very applied-based, very practical-based. And what it also means is that because it's primarily distance learning,
right?
It opens the borders, like we were saying. So I have students from the States, I've got students from China, I've got students from all over the world, from a variety of backgrounds. I've got a guy from Real Madrid, and you know, a huge variety of backgrounds. And my concluding lecture at the Masters, when we get together for a 2-week intensive, is, sure, the best thing about a Masters is not the information that you get, despite the fact that being great. The best thing about the Masters is the people that you meet.
Interaction, yeah.
100%, you know, it's the relationships that sustain you through our industry and get you jobs and enable learning and all those sorts of things, which is how we connect, you know. And the great thing is, because there are people from all over the world, you're getting an influx of ideas from all over the world. So certainly in the units that I teach, I try and bring evidence-based training and practice, but with a real feel for the things that I've seen over the world, whether it's in China or whether it's in the UK or Australia as well. And I think that's the thing that people really like about the course.
I agree, and it's if I'm not mistaken, it's mostly distance learning, but there are 2-week intensives or two gaps of time that you get together and interact, and I think it's really unique, and like you said, what a great melting pot of minds from all over the world coming together and interacting and talking shop, and that, I mean, that's got to be one of the best 2-week gaps in anybody's year for sure.
It's unreal, Ron, and the reason I teach on it is because I want to learn. Yeah. The reason you teach is because you want to learn. And you get to spend time with these people, and you get to, one part of me feels that I'm actually giving back to the profession that's given me so much and, you know, trying to pass it forward. But equally, on a more selfish level, you go, right, well, what is it that I can learn from this guy from Real Madrid? Or what is it that I can learn from Greg Huff today? Or whatever it is, you know. And I'm just so fortunate that it's down the road from us. And our players utilize their facility a lot because, you know, it's world class, and we utilize the expertise there because it's world class. And,
sure,
you know, we're pretty fortunate, you know.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I want to get into, you know, programming for rugby, you know, and so can you kind of lay out the annual plan, you know, just kind of what are the seasons and, you know, maybe number of days of training versus conditioning, those types of things?
Yeah, well, so we lost on the weekend, which knocked us out of the finals, unfortunately. So what we've done is we've given the lads 2 weeks break. They then come, we've got a secondary competition called the NRC, which we are entered in. So our lads will play that. It's a 9-week competition and then finals after that. And then they'll have 5 weeks off, and then they go into pre-season. So pre-season will start November. Our first trial match will be in January, and then competition matches, so competitive matches for points, will start in February, and that goes through till July. So it's actually the Super Rugby season is reasonably short. There's only 16 games and then finals on top of that. But interspersed, you've got international matches and right. and the like. So it ends up by being a year-round sport, like all the big sports, I suppose, around the world. In terms of a weekly plan, it, for us, because we're so limited by our travel, it will depend on whether we're playing home or away. It will depend on whether we're having to fly from Perth to South Africa or Perth to New Zealand, because that obviously tells us so much of our time we're going to be in the air or recovering from being in the air.
Right.
But on a standard week, from Saturday to Saturday, if we were playing two consecutive games at home, we would have a Saturday match. Sunday would be recovery. So because our guys travel so much and we know that family time and home time is so important, I'll only get the injured players in on the Sunday for review. Other than that, they go through their recovery protocols themselves. They need to accrue 100 points. So we've got a 100-point recovery system, which I can talk about later.
Yeah.
The Monday will be a lot of meetings with coaches, will be screening, will be a light flush and a bit of a lighter run going over some of the lessons that we learned from the previous game. Tuesday is the big day, so we will tend to train in the morning and then have recovery in the afternoon and then another training session in the afternoon.
Okay.
In the morning, it will be a team session, so forwards and backs combined, and in the afternoons, they tend to split up, so the backs will train and then the forwards will train. Whilst the backs are training, the forwards are in the gym. Whilst the forwards are training, the backs are in the gym.
Gotcha.
The Wednesday tends to be a training-free day, which is the recovery day for rehab and regeneration and the like. Thursday will be a faster day, but a single session. Friday will be a captain's run, so that is a shorter, sharper session whereby the we just go through plays. And it's a confidence thing before the match on Saturday.
Right.
In terms of lifting, in season, we will do an upper body lift on Monday. We'll do a lower body lift on a Tuesday. We will do a combo lift on a Thursday. And then some guys might do a light pump on the Friday prior to a match, but not too many of them.
Right. Well, what do you, you know, so that's an in-season. What's an off-season or, you know, pre-season kind of look like?
We structure it according to blocks. So we won't do the same pre-season for the whole 13 weeks of pre-season. We'll divide it into groups of two or groups of three, and depending on the emphasis of that will depend on what will shape what the week looks like. The start of pre-season is very much about athletic development, developing resilience, developing robustness, earning the right to run fast, which is a big thing we talk about in our organisation, earning the right to run fast, so accruing the miles, accruing, increasing speed in the legs to protect against hamstring injuries, for example. And then as we go through pre-season, there's much more of a contact focus and then much more of a learning focus and the like. In terms of lifting during the week in the pre-season, it's pretty heavy. You know, we'll do two uppers, we'll do two lowers, and there'll be combos in there as well. So the boys will be lifting 4 to 5 times a week. Last year, what we did was we had a 7-week block of pretty much uninterrupted athletic development, and we were getting the guys to lift morning and afternoon on a number of days during the week, and that was probably one of the biggest influences in our successful season this year was actually getting the guys to spend quality time improving their body, which they just never do because they're playing so much.
Right.
Whereas we mandated last year that no, they were going to stay with us and they were going to lift and they were going to lift heavy. Initially, I was the most hated man in Perth because I stopped them, you know, going back to their homes or whatever, but quite rapidly they saw that they were improving in ways that they hadn't done since they were 17, you know. And And when competitive athletes get to chase a rabbit, that's when you get people on board. And
there's no doubt. And
the train just picked up speed, and boys were lifting heavier than ever before. They were getting faster. You know, we don't talk too much about strength training, although that's a key focus. We talk about athletic development. So some guys have got a very strong strength development focus, whereas some people need much more of a power focus. Some guys need a speed focus. Some guys need a rehab focus. So whatever it is of their individual needs, that's what they get programmed for, rather than a generic program that everyone is shoehorned into. We try and fit the program around the individual.
So in that 7 week gap there, you know, you're bringing them back twice a day or training them twice a day. What did that normal, was that, you know, was it a lift in the morning and a run in the afternoon, or was it two lifts, or what's a normal day look like?
So generally speaking, we'll lift in the afternoon, and that's a bit of that's for risk mitigation. So trainings, we like to be fast and intense. So when I say training, I mean practice. And so what we've found is that our injury risk profile substantially lifted if we were doing heavy leg sessions and then getting them to run fast.
Right.
It's not something that Usain Bolt would do. It's probably not something that we should get our outside backs to do. So our forwards tend to be a little bit more resilient. They don't get up to the same high speeds as our backs. So I'm quite happy for them to lift it and then train. But our backs tend to be a little bit more, they're more fast twitch profile athletes.
Sure.
So they'll always lift last. The exception to that will be in pre-season, where we'll often want them lifting when they're fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will have a lower speed session in the afternoon. So, again, it depends on what the aim of the program is, and that's why it's critical to have a really good conversation with your head coach and to be planning with your head coach so he doesn't have the wrong expectation of how fast a team practice is going to be in the afternoon because you've just gone max deadlifting, for example.
That's right. So if it was an upper body lift and they walked into the weight room, are they going through some prehab? Are they going through any correctives? What's the normal session look like?
Yeah, when they come in the morning, they will screen with the medical guys. They'll have a look at their particular factors that we're interested in. So it might be a sit and reach, or someone with an Achilles tendinopathy, they might have to do their hop test or whatever.
Right.
They then have a period, what we call robustness time, where they work on their own individual correctives. In that time, they might be foam rolling, they might be doing rotator cuff work, they might be doing some hip mobility drills or whatever it is. And then when we lift, so the music's off for warm up, because warm up is about, you know, really honing into the technique of what you're trying to do. So there might be some overhead squats, there might be some light plyo stuff, there might be some hamstring work in there. And then once we're satisfied that the boys are warmed up, not just physiologically, but cued into the lifting session, the session will start. And that's when the tunes start, and that's when the boys are in and they lift hard, they lift heavy, and then they're out of there. An upper body session will typically comprise of a push and a pull and variations thereof. So we're very big on making sure that the athlete is symmetrical.
Sure.
And so there'll be double arm, there'll be single arm, there'll be some torso strength work as well. It'll be horizontal push, horizontal pull, as well as vertical pull and vertical push. Similar to American football, rugby is a multi-planar sport. So they need to be strong and resilient in not just all planes, but combinations of those planes as well. So we do a lot of rotation work as well.
You mentioned earlier, you know, your 100-point recovery system. I'd like to hear more about that.
What we've found is that rather than mandating you must do ice baths, you must wear compression socks, you must do this, you must do that, we know from hormonal profiling studies that it's better to have a menu, because what is the best recovery strategy for Ron McKeefery might be very different to what the best recovery strategy for David Joyce is, and it's folly to assume that we're the same. So you may love a massage, but for me, I hate a massage, and therefore all that does is spike my cortisol levels, which is inhibitory to recovery. So therefore what we do is we don't mandate. We say you do need to accrue 100 points for recovery. You get 25 points for 9 hours sleep. You get 25 points for return to pre-match weight and nutrition. And then you've got a raft of options that might be worth 25 points or 10 points or whatever it is, and you need to build up your menu so you accrue 100 points. And that might be compression stockings, it might be massage, it might be doing a flexibility session. Interestingly, what we've found is that the hormonal profiling for guys that do things individually is not quite as effective or as advantageous as it is when you're doing it with your mates. Sure. So you do get... You get 10 points for doing a flexibility session or a beach recovery session by yourself, but you get 20 points if you do it with three or more people, because that what that power of social interaction gives you is a flood of happy chemicals,
right,
which vital for your recovery. So that accrues more points. And the other thing is if you get on the booze, that's minus 25 points. So as soon as a sip of beer touches your lips, bang, you've got to find another 25 points from somewhere.
That's great. That's great. So the, how do you present that to the athletes? Is that on a poster somewhere? Is it?
Yeah. We've got lots of posters around the place with the boys doing silly things and saying it's a postage stamp saying 25 points and someone's someone's freezing their ass off in an ice pool and they get 25 points and there's a picture of that stuck around and the boys are pretty good with it, you know. And
yeah.
A lot of it requires buy-in and we encourage the players to drive that. So we're happy to be the shepherds, but they are responsible for their own practice. So we set the outcomes that we want. We show them the map. We show them the best way to get there, and we will shepherd them, but they are expected to drive that system because ultimately we can't get out there and pass the ball and kick the goals for them. That's on right. The pitch. So they need to develop that inner sort of drive. And we've got a terrific bunch of blokes at Western Force, Ron. And so we don't have too many problems. Occasionally you get a couple of guys that are forgetful or try and steal the milk from your tea, as an old coach of mine would say, but ultimately they're very, very good, and we've got a strong leadership group that will enforce those things as well.
Well, that makes a difference. But, you know, obviously playing off of their competitive nature to try to accomplish a task helps as well, and I really like the idea of that.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that helps too is showing them that, well, we're giving you a menu. You've just got a
choice.
Yeah. And that makes them central to the process.
No doubt. Input psychology, obviously, you know, if they have input into the program, they feel they have more ownership of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned, you know, the similarities between rugby and football. You know, when you're evaluating, you've gone overseas or whatever, and you're researching, what have you pulled from American football? And then vice versa, what have you said, you know what, if American football did some of this, maybe that would help them out as well?
I think what the American football model is kind of different to ours in a lot of ways. The sport is brutal, like our sport is brutal. Our guys will run 10 kilometers in a match, dependent on the person,
right.
And we'll have multiple efforts and those sorts of things. American football will tend to run less overall, but have explosive efforts that are probably more than what our guys would do, because you can't run a 10-second 100 if you've got the veil of fatigue of running 10Ks behind you.
Sure.
What I think American football does unbelievably well is work on acceleration mechanics and agility mechanics.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of it is natural to the guys, But part of it is just the terrific coaching that they get, you know. And I've seen some of your stuff, and it's unbelievable. So I try and pull as much of that sort of stuff as I can and use in our program. And I've been lucky enough to do quite a bit of work with Athletes Performance and Exos over the years, and used some of their methodology as well. And a lot of that is based on the NFL Combine work. And so a combination, I've got a saying, the best coach is a thief. And so the best coaches are always trying to take things from other programs and see how it applies to their group of athletes. And so there's things that we do in our program agility-wise that you would recognise from, you know, videos that you've posted and the like. In terms of what we do, I think what rugby does very well is generate neck strength because of the scrum, the forces that go through the neck and the spine are so great that the guys get concussed all the time, and they get really bad neck problems if they weren't strong through their neck. So we've got a very good evidence-based neck training program involving low load and high load work, isometric, eccentric, concentric, and what we call shock G or snap G, whereby the players are having to control their own heads against gravity, a sudden change in gravity, which is something that I've taken from Formula One.
Wow.
And I think that's something that rugby probably lead the world in. And the other thing that we're very good at is utilising GPS.
Yeah.
So how we program on the back of GPS is as good in rugby as it is anywhere in the world, I believe.
Elaborate a little bit on, you know, the shock G and the snap G, and just your basic programming for the neck and trap area over the course of a week.
We'll tend to do this in the middle part of the week, and particularly on a Wednesday if that's a training free day. And so we'll have guys, so typically they'll come into me and they'll be lying, let's just say, on a bench on their back with their shoulders at the tip of the bench, and I'll hold their head and they'll close their eyes. And I'll put their head into a particular position, whether it is left lateral flexion or extension or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just move their head around until their neck muscles are relaxed, and then I'll drop the head. Now, obviously, their head weighs 3 kilos or so. Some of our guys, their heads weigh a lot more, and some of them weigh a lot less. and they need to be able to catch their neck. Or catch their head. And so what we've found is that guys that get repeated stingers or burners in their shoulders, if they get repeated concussions, they're really slow with this. So they will let their head snap back and before they catch it. So what I believe in is with neck strength, it's not just the strength, maximal force that you can apply that's critical. It's your rate of force development.
Yeah.
And so doing those sorts of things, and then you get them doing it in sideline and in prone as well, those things are working on their ability to generate force and to stop force.
That's fantastic.
Then they'll do that wearing a helmet. We don't wear helmets in our sport, but we'll get them to wear a helmet or whatever. And that's been really big for us, really, really helpful for us.
No, it's very interesting. You know, you mentioned some of the combine test early on, and you know what, from both an evaluation standpoint of looking at athletes coming in, but also from an annual reviewing your performance training, you know, and accountability there. You know, what are some of the tests that you guys specifically look at and do?
Testing for us is something that we do a lot of during the week. Because we set the loads, and therefore we can see how people are going. We do have set testing periods, and they're designed to keep the athlete accountable.
Mm-hmm.
and to tell us where they are in equal measure, I would say. The repeated running test that we use is a yo-yo test, and the reason we use that is not necessarily because it's the best test, because there are great tests out there, the 30-15 intermittent shuttle and the like. the reason we use it is because we've used it for so long. We have got such a bank of data that we know what good looks like.
Right.
So we use that for a repeated running test, and we use both the Yo-Yo 1 and Yo-Yo 2. We find with Yo-Yo 1, it's more suited to the fitter, more endurance-based athletes, so our backs. And the Yo-Yo 2 gets really quick, really fast. And so that will drop out the big guys quite quickly, not because they don't have the aerobic capacity to do it, but just because it gets too quick for them.
Sure.
We look at speed testing, so 0 to 10 for the guys that don't do the high volumes of running, and then the 0 to 40 for the outside backs that need to be quick, both in acceleration and top-end speed.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of strength, we're pretty basic, you know. We look at bench press, bench pull, and we look at ratios of those. We look at squat and deadlift. We look at vertical jump, and we look at reactive strength index as well, so to see how quick someone is, like with their amortization phase.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a series of resilience tests that they need to be able to do. So a Behring-Sorensen, which is a lumbar spine endurance test. They need to be able to hold that for 2 minutes. They need to be able to do glute ham raises, four sets of 10. They need to be able to demonstrate that they can do 40 calf raises, which is all fairly basic stuff, but this is for entry into the program. This is for us to say, yes, you're safe to be able to train, you're robust enough. They need to be able to hula hoop, believe it or not, because we've found that with guys that have got the motor skill to be able to hula hoop and hold a hula hoop for 2 minutes without just muscling it up, don't tend to get back pain. And the reason for that is they're just skillful movers. So if you come into our facility, you'll see guys hula hooping, which is kind of bizarre, and I get a lot of odd looks for guys that are new to our program, but guys that are used to me now understand the benefits of it, and so they do that. There's a protocol that they need to do there. There's a curriculum. And then we look at gait proficiency and landing proficiency from a jump as well, so looking at how well they can dampen their impulse. So there's a number of things. A lot of them are generic for the entire group because we recognise them as competencies that any rugby player, any elite athlete should be able to cope with. But then there are individual competencies based on deficiencies or based on needs of that position as well.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I want to shift gears a little bit. You know, I want to talk about the book, you know, High Performance for Sports, unbelievable book, and to be honest with you, I'm halfway through it, and I can already say that. And you guys did a fantastic job. But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your motivation for being, you know, for the project, and you know, how you were able to get such great people like Franz Bosch and Joel Jamieson and Dan Baker and everybody to contribute chapters to it.
Oh, mate, listen, that's a lot of people have said nice things about it, but to hear you say those sorts of things is
it's unbelievable.
That's it honestly is. It's such a big thing for us. The project was we came up with it simply because there's a lot of textbooks out there that are research based or based on individuals' thoughts. And they're all great in their own way, but what we wanted to do was have a series of masterclasses. And so my concept was, let's create the world's best conference. And but just in book form, so you can access it at any time. So we came up with all the things that we thought were things that coaches on the ground need to know. So whether it's anaerobic, like training for anaerobic capacity or training for strength, or then we thought, well, a lot of them are covered in other books, so how can we make it flow into a high-performance model? So we've got a chapter there from Derek Hansen on how you translate strength from the weight room into speed, because ultimately there's very few sports that win games on the back of a bench press. Speed that happens.
That's
speed that changes games. So how do you do that? And it's an applied book. It's a series of the world's best coaches giving their thoughts on the best way to train a particular aspect of performance. So if Dan Baker, if you employed him for your organisation as a consult, what would he say about strength coaching? How would he try and change your program, or how would he give advice about your program? That's all in the book there, and it's written in that sort of language. It's not written like Joyce 2010 said this in his review of 30,000 studies on sedentary college students. It is all about these guys work with the best in the world. What is it that they think, and how do they apply their wisdom?
Well, I can attest to that. It's not an easy read in that your highlight. I tried, I'm a highlighter. I go through and I underline everything, and I get through the first couple chapters, and I got pretty much the whole chapter underlined. So it's not an easy read like that, but it's an easy read in that it is conversational type of a tone, and you really feel like you're talking to Dan Baker or Joel Jamison or David Joyce, and I really appreciated that.
And that was the great thing, that was the brief that we gave the authors, and we selected the authors, the contributors that can communicate in that way, and that was so critical for us. So it had to be something which you can read once and apply something immediately, but it was of sufficient depth that it would reward repeat readings.
No, absolutely. It's fantastic. What, it's written for both a veteran strength coach going through and a strength coach that's just starting as well. And so what were some of the biggest takeaways that you would say for, the advanced strength coach reading it? And, what are some of the biggest takeaways for the strength coach just starting out?
I reckon Franz Boss's chapter on dynamic systems and how you change your training profile and training emphasis to really develop skill was outstanding. And it took me, honestly, probably 15 reads to get it to and edits to get it to where it is now. But that's really, really important for the veteran strength coach. Mm. And similarly, the great thing about veteran strength coaches is they understand that the more you know, the more you don't know.
That's right.
So just refreshing ideas is really helpful as well. I reckon Sophia Nymphius's chapter on agility, where it looks at not just the mechanics but the decision making and the cognitive aspect of agility is really great. And Jeremy Shepherd's chapter on jumping and landing work is critical as well. For the rookie strength coach, I reckon going through some of the wisdom with programming from Ben Rosenblatt from the British Olympic Organisation is sensational. I reckon the movement efficiency chapter from Craig Ranson's really good. Mm. Look, I really don't think there's a weak chapter in there,
and not at all.
It depend on the emphasis of that individual coach as to what they'll get most out of. But what we've tried to highlight is little sections of wisdom in each chapter that a coach can apply immediately, and they should apply to the veteran or the rookie as well.
Yeah. Well, you hit it, the nail right on the head early on in the episode, in that you've got to find great mentors and surround yourself with people if you have any desire to go on in this business, and you've been, fortunate to have that in your life. I've been fortunate to have that in my life. And obviously, by books and conferences and things along those lines,
yeah,
you can continue to do that. And give me a piece of advice that, a profound piece of advice that a strength coach has given you that's really kind of helped shape your career.
The one thing that always sticks in my mind is that athletes don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah.
It's really important, and that's fundamental to being a coach, and that's the difference between being a coach and someone that downloads a program from the internet and says, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to tap into the individual motivation of the player or the athlete, and then be able to get the best out of them. And the only way you can do that is if you can get onto their level.
That's
because
right.
As humans, we tend to work well with people that are like us,
mm-hmm.
And so coaches that can change who they are to get the most out of a player are the best coaches. So I know that the way you would deal with a rookie that is battle-hardened from schooling might be different to the way you deal with a rookie who's a bit of a princess and been fed milk from his mum from an early age and not really had to deal with too many struggles because you understand the meaning and the importance of context.
Right.
And the way you deal with them is very different to the way you deal with someone that's been a veteran in your organisation or in the sport for 10 years. So getting onto their level by showing them and actually really caring about the individual, that's the thing which I will keep in my mind all the time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, I talked about that at the NSCA conference, actually, about athletes, you know, not caring how much you know. And really the biggest thing is you know, one of the things that Coach Dungy with the Bucks, you know, told me early on was, you know, that you've got to take the emotion out of whether or not they're doing the sets, reps, and all that. You got to put the emotion back into developing the time you have with them outside of the weight room. You know, so you know, you got them for 2 hours a day. They've got 22 hours to mess up everything you just did. So if you really want to be a great strength coach, you have to invest in those other 22 hours so that you can really not fight in a losing battle. You know, when you're seeing them in those 2 hours. So
yeah,
I agree with you 100%. But I know you got to get going, and you know, I could talk to you all day, buddy. And you know, but we always kind of end these things with a couple of resources.
Yeah,
give us your favorite quote, something that motivates you that maybe is plastered up in your weight room.
The thing that's on my whiteboard in my wall, written in permanent ink, is "The hotter the flame, the sharper the sword."
That's awesome. No, that's I got that one as well. What about a book? Obviously, well, I'll recommend your book for you because you probably won't do it. But this book right here, go get this book. But a book that you recommend and, you know, a website and an app recommendation.
The book, and this is not a sports science book or a strength and conditioning book. This is a coaching wisdom book. And I know that in America you've got some unbelievable coaches and books from Lombardi and Walsh and those guys. And probably our best coach in Australia is a guy called Wayne Bennett from Rugby League. And his book is one that I read. I make sure I read every day. Every year. And it's Don't Die With the Music in You. And it is a really short read that you'll get through in a day. What have we got here? It's 216 very easy pages, and it's just full of quotes, full of wisdom from probably one of the best coaches Australia's ever had.
Oh, that's awesome. We picked that up for sure. What about a website or a app?
The website that I look at all the time is one from one of the contributors from the book, Joel Jameson. I really like his 8 weeks out book. Yeah.
No, that's a fantastic one.
And in terms of the app, I must admit, look, I'm not a huge app guy. I've got a few that I use, but one that I use probably most frequently is the WADA app, WADA, which is the drugs in sport. So we get drug tested all the time, and for good reason, you know. And
sure.
So we're always making sure that we are compliant and making sure we're doing the right things. And also it's really important that the athletes have that on their phones as well. So if they go to the pharmacy because they've got a cold, they can check up the ingredients of their cold and flu preparation and make sure that it's safe. I think that's absolutely critical for any athlete.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, buddy, you've spent a ton of time, and I apologize it's gone for as long as it has. We're going to have you back on because I've got about 9 million more questions for you, man. But you've been a stud, and I truly appreciate you coming on and appreciate the contribution that you've made to the strength and conditioning community with this book and all you do with the university and conferences and all that. But truly appreciate it, man.
Listen, Ron, it's absolutely my pleasure, and thank you so much for all your contribution and sitting down next to me at UKSCA all those years ago and just saying, hey, coach, and it's amazing, you know, how these sorts of things, these sorts of relationships evolve. And I always talk about the best thing, as I said, about conferences and courses is not the information you learn, it's the people that you meet. And my life is richer from having met you and coaches like you. So it's a real thrill and an honor to be involved.
Thanks a lot, buddy. See
you. Cheers. Bye.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out RonMcKeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @RMcKeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @Ron.McKeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.